Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, welcome everybody, yet again to the Grow Your Business podcast. I have the great pleasure today of speaking with Tim Hyde. Tim, how are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. Although I've just been told my renovation budget is increasing by about 10 grand.
Don't worry about it. It'll all sort itself out.
All that scope creep, right? It's like, oh, that budget you said was going to be 5 is now 15. And I'm like, oh my God, okay.
Scope creep. It usually has something to do with either stuff that you didn't imagine was going to happen or something else happened during the project that made that happen. Yeah. So either one of those two things and probably a bunch of other stuff. But for outside of that very unfortunate incident, I'm very sorry to hear that. Tell everybody who isn't aware of you already, of Tim Hyde from Win More Clients and from Tim Hyde himself, what do you get up to, Tim? And what is it? What is it about, like, as a short annotated history, I guess, just to kick the podcast off so everyone gets a bit of a snapshot of who you are, and then we can dive into it.
Yeah, sure. I call it I'm using the term sales optimization strategist at the moment. Mm. Growth engineer, growth hacker, you name it. I've just been fascinated probably since a really young age about this idea of entrepreneurship and people who kind of want to change their world, however big that world happens to be, right? Mm. And the guts and determination to try something a little bit outside the box to go and do so. And I'm not sure where that actually comes from for me. I don't come from a business family. I didn't grow up with business mentors. Per se, like I know a lot of people have, and that natural sort of progression of following your parents' footsteps into the family business and that sort of stuff. I never had that because my mum was a teacher and my dad was an ag scientist. But I recall, and maybe just because I keep telling myself the story, right? I recall probably about at ages sort of 4 or 5, I was fascinated with my Uncle Scrooge golden book. Right. So, Uncle Scrooge from Donald Duck, right? Mm. Who's filthy rich, and he would row his little dinghy round his money pit. Right.
Yeah.
And dive into these coins. Right. And I thought this was really cool. And I was just fascinated with this idea of like this reckless abundance.
Mm.
Now, to this day, I still don't know what Uncle Scrooge does. I don't think they actually explained it in Disney folklore.
No.
What Scrooge does, but suffice to say, he seems like someone who's always having fun, and I think as a young kid, this kind of really fascinated me about that money equals fun, or sort of this abundance of wealth equals the ability to have fun and kind of do whatever you want. And I looked around me, and I'm not sure, again, probably more from osmosis than anything else, and looked around at people who kind of went to work, came home, stress, da 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 da. And I don't particularly remember that, but I'm sure it was the case, right? Mm. Certainly my parents tell the story of saying, they weren't always comfortably well off like they are now. They worked a lifetime to be able to get to that, and they're now retired and enjoying a fairly good retirement. But they say, oh, there was plenty of nights where we only had like boiled eggs and Vegemite on toast, and that was the deal, because that's all we could afford. Now, I don't remember that being something that I missed as a kid. I think, I think the perspectives of our childhood are sometimes a bit skewed like that. We don't necessarily know what hardships there are or whatever. I think as parents, we just generally try to shield our
And you don't focus on them as a kid, right?
We don't focus on those things. We just
go playing and you're doing things that kids do.
yeah, you know, you've got your imagination. I mean, this is back before the internet and online gaming, where you could actually use your own imagination rather than, I know that's a conversation we've had, mate, about, you know, how digital technology has actually killed creativity.
Yeah.
But I remember this being, you know, when I launched my first business at the age of six. I'd just moved to Canberra about then. I decided to run a circus for some reason. And I invited all the neighborhood kids over to be in my circus. And it was a great way to sort of get to know everyone at the school as well. And this is probably the first one I distinctly remember being, you know, my idea that I was going to do, and I was going to sort of make some money from this thing. And I had everybody dress up and act in my circus, and everyone had a great old time. And there was apple bobbing and pin the tail on the donkey and da da da, you know, maybe the things you whack with a baseball bat and all the lollies fall out of them.
Oh, yeah, pinata. Yeah.
Pinata, that's the one. Yeah. You know, and everyone had a great old time. And I had, I can't even recall how much money it was. It was just a few dollars worth of that I'd made. And I spent it on I spent it on a couple of things, right? I bought a brass inlaid oak cigar box from our local sort of trash and treasure street markets. And that was my money pit. Right. And all of my coins lined up beautifully inside my money pit.
Hilarious.
And I spent a whole dollar on 1 cent sweets, 1 cent lollies from the local shops. And I ate them all on the way home from school.
Did you get sick?
No, I don't know. I was on this massive sugar high though. Right. And I thought, you know, this is this thing, right? And I don't know whether it was the sugar rush or whatever, but I've gone, oh my God, this is so cool. Right. I can have fun. People can pay me to have fun, and I can turn it into sugary lollies. This is the best thing ever, right?
How can it's your first, like, you know, go and being an entrepreneur is your get a sugar high.
All right, how can I repeat this? Right? How can I kind of do this again and again and again? Right? And I think that was probably my first experience of entrepreneurship, without all the other crap that comes along with it, right? With owning a business and payroll and taxes and all the other stuff that sort of comes along that we know as adults, consumers. But the, you know, endearing memory of that, and, you know, even sort of through my youth and teenage years, launching these sort of little entrepreneurial ventures, was always, right, people have a need for something, and I can provide that through my own enterprise and be rewarded, you know, as a result, right, and do whatever. And I think that was probably for me the sort of catalyst to get where I am now. And I think without those experiences, I'd be like very comfortable with a day job, turning up in the public service.
Yeah.
You know, 5 days a week, 40 hours a week. You know.
And so that's one of the interesting things about this podcast too, is on a personal note and then in a different way for people listening, is I get to find out completely different things that I didn't know about you, like that sort of origin story, knowing that you, because like your business, your, you know, sales and marketing automation, and of course, you know, a lot more than that you can sort of expand on, but that story gives like an interesting framework to that, because then for me listening to it, it's like, well, you had this great, as this concept about what that could sort of represent. And then fast forward, you know, all these years to this point now, then, you know, my assumption is that, you know, come the advent of things like sales and marketing automation, which is however many years ago now, like you stumbled across that and it's like, oh, you know, the idea being to do things better in order to achieve things in a more optimized and better sort of way for, you know, for yourself in one respect, but then for other people too. You know, that's it. Is that so, as a segue, I guess, into that part of the conversation, is that what you were talking with, like your origin story of sorts, was that those ideas, did that lead to when you stumbled across sales and marketing automation going, wow, this is an even better way to do stuff? Or how did that actually happen?
I think there's a kind of art and science to growing a business, right? Certainly, you know, the interest in entrepreneurship probably comes from that sort of childhood experience and trying different. You know, like I introduced a sausage sizzle to our school fete because I was like, I don't want Devonshire tea and cake. Right? I want a soft drink and a sausage in a bun. You know, so there was this kind of recognition that people need something solved, and you know, enterprise comes from the ability to kind of find a solution to that in a creative way. I somehow managed to find myself doing IT at uni before the internet was a thing. You know, 1991, 1992, 93. And the thing that I found with that, you know, this is back when you had sort of dot matrix paper, right? It was print out, it was all perforated metal and you know, kind of stuff. And we would write code to deliver a consistent outcome. Right? And business in many ways, I think, you know, almost we sort of create this little microcosm of the Industrial Revolution, right? You know, previously when pre-Industrial Revolution, it was you as a craftsman, sourced all the materials, produced the goods, turned up the markets and hawked your wares. Post-Industrial Revolution, you know, you've got robotics that deliver all the thing and you press the button and, you know, have someone else sell it for you. And this almost is a microcosm of what a business journey is from when we start a business to when we kind of maybe exit in some capacity. And the thing that I found writing sort of code at uni was, and even sort of when I sort of started my working life, was you start at line one and you go through line two, line three, line four, line, you know, 50, line 78 million, da, 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 da. And if there is a break in the code, and we would use, you know, at uni, we would kind of roll this paper out down the sort of the dorm room hallway and sort of red pen going, okay, where is this stuff broken? Because it'd take forever to bloody compile bits of code into a program to execute. Meanwhile, we'd piss off to the pub and have a few beers and then come back and go, oh, shit, it broke. All right, print it out, work out where it's broken, recompile it, go back to the pub again, have a few more beers and repeat the process. What I started to realize in a sort of business context, because I founded a social media site in the late 90s as well, on the side of my day job with a couple of mates, was that the way we wrote code was very similar in many ways to the customer journey that businesses took people on. And I'll go into that in a bit more detail. And what I mean by customer journey is that someone starts with a problem, but they do not know about you that you can fix it. In fact, if they never discover who you are, you will never be able to fix someone's problem, but the problem still exists for these people. It may not be today's problem or tomorrow's problem or the day after's problem, but they still have a problem that people have. All right. Mine was I needed a new sort of, you know, kitchen to be able to sell my house. Yours might be the website doesn't work. Right. And we know that you can fix websites, Saul. Right. Or you're not articulating your value proposition in a way that's really easy for people to understand. Great. Solution is maybe an infographic. Right. So people have a problem whether they know about you or not. And your customer journey is like that bit of code that it starts at line one when they don't know who you are and start to discover, you know, you and you, that you can solve their problem. And it goes through line one, two, three, four, five, and it gets to one, whatever. But if it breaks, if that code breaks at any particular point, those customers get the blue screen of death or the spinning wheel, which we've all experienced in some capacity when we use computer programs, or it hangs, right? Yesterday for me, it was Netflix, right? With the little spinning red wheel that says Netflix isn't loading. Great. This is exactly the same. Well, so what do you do when you get that spinning wheel of death? You either restart the program or you go and watch something else or you go and do something else. Right? Because Netflix wasn't working for me yesterday, I went and watched another channel. Right? I went on to Disney and watched Disney instead. So Netflix has started their customer journey with me, got to the point where something didn't work and I've gone and done something else as a customer. And we think about that in context of code, same thing. Line one, line two, line three, line 10. Line 10 is broken. Customer goes elsewhere. In a business context, it means we can't solve our clients' problems. And they either go unresolved or they go and buy from somebody else who's clearly not as good as us.
Mm. There you go. That's the way you explain that too gives me like a bit of a flavor of what you were talking about before, that mix of art and science, like the metaphor of using code's a really good one actually, because that's arguably easier tools to be able to identify broken code, but you'll often have like two developers, you know, in sort of sprints and stuff, like looking through stuff to check as they're doing it, because you know it's often the littlest things too, isn't it? It's like that's, you know, in itself that's probably an interesting metaphor there too. It's often the smallest, most, you know, the in the world of code, like missing a period, yeah, or there's a space and you can't even like see the space, so the detail is so small that it's almost invisible. And so therefore, you know, to identify it in that sense, you have to really be focusing in a particular way. And I mean, is you could say that's also very similar. Like there's very, very small things that happen in business, or, you know, even if you use the metaphor, I guess, of, you know, Chinese whispers or miscommunication, someone says A, someone hears B, and yet they're hearing and sort of saying and saying the same thing, but the interpretation is like, you know, seemingly minuscule to one person, but to the other person it's like, what? You know, yeah, it's like completely different. So yeah, so as a business sort of strategist then too, like I can see sort of a pattern forming here, which is interesting to me because I like, you know, I like when patterns kind of reveal themselves in things, is that when you're because you like say to people, you know, sales and marketing automation, you know, is very big and has been for a long time now. A lot of people do it. It's like, you know, I'm not sure if you'd still consider it to be like in the wild west of sales and marketing automation, if it's still in that period, or whether like the state of Alabama has been like established yet, you know, or at what point that is, but it's like certain industries, they go through these kind of periods of the wild west. And I feel like web design is still, I mean, there's just like so many people that do these things, right? So.
Well, I think we've got these two things. There's a definite relationship between web design and sales and marketing automation. Right? And again, it's just the tool that we use to get someone to take the next step. Right? And for those of us who are parents who don't understand this particular metaphor, that if you ask your kids to clean their bedroom, it's not their priority. They will do the absolute bare minimum. Right?
Yeah, well, it's not specific, is it? It's not specific. It's like going, I want, hey, can you give me like a marketing campaign? Sure. Okay, now the detail. You know, it's like, let's say, clean up your bedroom. You know what? Fine, it could be just clean up your bedroom, but that's going to mean, once again, person A says this, person B hears this, person B wants to do X, you know, but person A doesn't really want them to do X. They want them to do Y, which is like properly clean it up. Or the, you know, so therefore, I guess the point there is being specific, right? You know, about being specific about things. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, the more we engineer the process, right? A business does the same thing over and over and over again. And I use that kind of analogy with the Industrial Revolution. You know, with deliberate intent, right? You know, when you craft a thing, right? So again, put yourself back in the sort of 1600s, you are crafting something, right? To sell to someone who needs that thing. You go through all the process yourself, come along the Industrial Revolution, we stick all this in factories and we work out that maybe if we specialize and do one part of that whole process, we can produce more output.
Mm.
So someone gets really good at crafting, I don't know, let me use this sort of cup for example, right? You know, someone does the handle, someone does the rest of the mug, for example, right? And then we go, okay, rather than having people on a conveyor belt, like where everyone's doing the one thing end to end, that if we just do one bit and we pass it on, it becomes a bit quicker, right? We get more output and we sort of stick people in factories to be able to do that. And then we go, oh my God, maybe we should use this little steam machine because that part of the process of hammering can be done a little bit more efficiently by a machine and then by robotics and so on and so forth. And it's the same thing in our business right now. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create a process in our business that produces the output of our business as consistently and proficiently as possible, right? So that we can maximize the one thing that we go into business for, right, which is profit, not customer outcomes almost a byproduct, okay? We want to maximize the profit. And we do this day in. Every time we wake up in the morning, we go, how can I improve my process? And how can I make it more efficient? And what can I learn from what I did yesterday to make today a little bit better?
Mm.
Now, if you never do this, that's fine. You're going to have a wonderful lifestyle business, right? But you're going to fight against inherent human nature, right, that says to us, we will find a more efficient way to do the thing we did yesterday so that I can conserve energy.
Mm. It's kind of like how I like to play squash. In fact, I had a mate last night playing squash. This is about, you know, in that idea of optimization. It was like trying to improve something and trying to use less energy because, you know, I'll be, you know, it just seems like pretty sensible to me. And I had a mate last night going, you know, giving me some crap about that. Only because, you know, he lost. It's like you were, you know, you always like to lose, to use the least amount of energy. I was like, well, of course. Why wouldn't I? You know, but it was interesting because that, you know, highlighting then in this conversation too, when you were saying just a second ago how, you know, people, and I assume you weren't really talking about everybody, but the idea that people wake up and go, you know, find new ways to improve things and optimize and all that. I mean, yeah, that's of course true, like for many of us, but like maybe, I mean, I don't have any numbers, but I would argue that for most people that they don't do that because they're just on the treadmill. And just doing a particular thing, and they don't have enough time to do that then too. And that you had something I was reading, I think it was on your website, and it got me thinking about like this whole sort of subject about like where to start with sales and marketing automation, and in terms of like, you know, people either like strategizing or wanting to optimize. For me, it's linked very closely because many people don't, like, you generally know you have to market and you know particular things, but that key point of knowing even where to begin, like, is that, have you found that can be a catalyst for people to start to, like, once you're having a chat with them, to start to have maybe an improved mindset and then even going, oh, well, you know, it's, and they don't know what they don't know, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, you don't, it's like going, you know, this, my friend next door said that I should be on Facebook because of,
I've seen
why, that. Why, you know, yeah. I mean, because someone said it and yeah, but then it gets back to what we were talking about before about the detail of like, okay, well, why? And then if so, why for you? Is it right? Okay, you're a specialist surgeon who does, you know, bone restructuring. Should you be on Facebook? You know, do you need to be on Facebook?
Mm.
Probably not because you're booked up for the next like 8 years. Okay, so, and all of those people, you know, sort of quite proactively like, well, I don't need a website. Because it's like, well, you know, and in fact, they frown upon it. And, you know, but there's all these questions. And so when somebody like comes to you and goes, like, say I'm a business owner and I call you up and I'm like, hi, Tim, I was referred to you because sales and marketing automation sounds really interesting to me. Like, why should I? I've heard it's really good, Tim. Mm. Now, why is it good and why should I do it? Like, have you got these sorts of questions? Do these crop up and you have like, well, some?
I think they crop up in the back of people's minds anyway, right? There's a lot of parts to running a business. Let's describe it as that, right? You know, you've got to be good at the thing that your business delivers, or at least competent, right? You've got to be a competent surgeon. You've got to be a competent builder. You've got to be a competent accountant, right? Mm. Promoting and scaling your business when you're not competent is probably not really a sensible idea. So at least become competent at what you do, right? Mm. You've got to have some idea about financial management, because running a business is a financial enterprise. You've got to be good with people, right? Because at some point your business will hire staff or interact with suppliers, right, who are acting as pseudo staff for your business. You've got to have some idea of the legal compliance framework that you work within in the state or country that you live in, and what you can do and what you can't do or shouldn't do, as the case may be. You've got to have, you know, to pick up, you know, Think and Grow Rich from Napoleon Hill. You know, you've got to have the right mindset. I personally think that the most important skill that you can have in business is around sales and marketing. Now, I know there's a lot of people who will go, oh, no, it's mindset. You've got to have the right mindset to grow. That seems to be the default. I suspect it's the default because lots of mindset coaches have said that is the most important skill you should need.
Mm.
But you can have a fantastic mindset. If you cannot market your business and you cannot sell, you won't have a business.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sales and marketing is the oxygen that drives everything else.
Mm.
If you can do that, then you have a business. May not be a very profitable one. Right, may not necessarily be the biggest one in the world, right? May not necessarily be a very successful one. You may have a shit culture and workplace that no one likes to come to, but you have a legit business.
Yeah, but it's a bit. I'll sort of ask whether you think this is true too. But I would imagine like some of that, like a lot of things, like they're a bit chicken in the egg too, aren't they? It's like if you've got like even sort of saying, okay, mindset is one of those, for me, like sort of amorphous terms that's like going, you know, it's very easy to inject meaning into it, but once again, get down into the specifics. So like having a good mindset could then also mean you're going to have a better approach because of a particular part of your mindset to sales and marketing.
Don't get me wrong. They're all important in their in their own right, right? And they are all symbiotic on each other. You can't really do one without the other. But it is such an important thing to have to get your sales and marketing right. And I think the process of automating or systemizing it, right? We use automation as just the use of technology to apply a system to your sales and marketing process. It's very much about getting that to be consistent and predictable. Now, the one thing we know as small business owners, and the one most attractive thing about working for someone else is the consistency of payroll, right? Every second Thursday, every second Wednesday, once on the 15th, once on the 30th or whatever, you get paid a X amount of dollars when you're an employee.
It's very comforting. Yeah.
It's very, very comforting. It is a little bit of a false economy, I guess, because you don't necessarily have control over the success of that enterprise that you're working for about whether you're going to get paid or not. Hopefully even in government, right? You know, yes, you can lose your job.
Yep.
Right? You go and find something else. But you do have that consistency and predictability of future revenue. Our job as business owners is to create that consistency and predictability for ourselves. And we can only really do that when we get a couple of things right. One is the consistency and predictability of our future sales, which conveniently also has a massive multiplier effect on the value of our business. But B, then, you know, that financial control inside, which everything else, which everything else plays onto. But the most important one, I think, again, is that consistency and predictability of sales, because that's the one thing I think keeps people up at night. It's not necessarily, am I going to make payroll together tomorrow for my team? It's
the
answer, am I going to get that client to pay me, or am I going to win that client or that job in order to be able to do those things?
Yeah, and, well, that's a constant. Yeah, that's a constant thing for all business, isn't it? Like, yeah. I mean, I still have that. Like, you go, oh, well, you don't know. You might, even if you've got a pretty good idea, you're like, well, you know, you don't actually know until, like, often the money's in the bank. You know, there's all sorts of things that happen.
Mm.
But so is in terms of yeah, that consistency. When I think about, like, having and we're talking about good use of technology to be able to create consistency and, of course, then understand numbers, because it's a numbers game, right? And you got and you got systems that you set up, and behind that is originally good strategy and good thinking, because it doesn't just, you know, magically happen on its own, of course. And so, but when you've got because, like, CRM, I guess this comes back very much, for me anyway, to the meaning of CRM, I mean, a customer relationship management. So if you are able to understand, like, via, you know, this good, you know, easy to use management of, you know, leads, and then also ultimately customers, and you don't just use it as, like, just a really, really, really good, you know, contact book. It's just like, it just keeps all your contacts, which I feel like most people probably, I mean, you know, once again, this is just me hypothetical, whether this is true or not, but I feel like most people view it like that, and then it's just to get some leads in. But can you, I guess, expand upon a little bit more how you those sort of expanded set of tools that something like a good CRM, because you use a particular one, you know, keeping contacts, sales and marketing automation, how it's much more than just, you know, a big contact book.
Yeah, well, look, firstly, yeah, the art of sales and marketing automation, sales optimization is around, I guess, creating that predictability. Okay, so I want to sort of just anchor that with people first.
Sure.
Your CRM tools, and there's a ton of them on the market, right? Whether it be, you know, anything from MailChimp to Salesforce and everything else in between. There are literally thousands. I think GoHead Level have muddied the waters a little bit lately by enabling agencies to create their own CRM offering by offering a bunch of SaaS tools. Yeah. But basically, as you say, CRM technically stands for customer relationship management. I would challenge people to think of it more as contact relationship management. It is a place where you can put information about the people that you know. Now, normally we would stick that into a head, right? Unfortunately, our brains are not really hardwired to kind of remember and recall data very easily. And I'll say this, you know, in context of some research done by anthropologist named Robin Dunbar in the sort of 80s and early 90s, and I think his paper was published sort of 1991, where he talks about this idea of how many relationships that we can maintain as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
He hypothesized that we can maintain 5 super intimate relationships. Okay, those are typically with our loved ones, right? So, you know, your significant other, your children, maybe your parents, right? Your siblings, and so on. Generally speaking, that's 5 really intimate relationships. And those are the often the people you spend the most time with, right? So you know what your partner is allergic to, and you know whether they like salt and pepper on their fried eggs, you know, rather than just a bit of salt, or you know what cup of tea they drink and whether they have one sugar or two sugars, you know, with milk and so on. Those kind of intimate details that are really sort of important. Outside of that, we have 15 close acquaintances, and that typically is often your family. Like, I don't know how my brother has his coffee, for example. I know he drinks coffee, but I would have to ask him to know what he has his coffee. I don't know how his day was at work yesterday, because I haven't seen him for probably a couple of weeks now. You know, those sorts of things. And so those, you know, tend to be sort of really close acquaintances. And then we have good friends. You know, there's about 15 really close people, you know, close friends. Then there's about sort of 15 to sort of 50, I guess, you know, close relationships, what we call them friends, you know, people we hang out with, but you might only see them once or twice a year. Right? You probably can't remember whether they've got a dog or a cat. Right? You don't necessarily know up-to-date details about whether they've changed jobs, right, or what they did last week, right? You might remember what sporting team they follow, but that's about it, right? And as we get less and less intimate with people, we've got about sort of 1,500 people we can recognize, you know, and I guess the issue is that the less, if we think about our business context in the same way, there is about, you know, there's lots of people who know your business or know about your business, right? People you've met at networking events or have dropped onto your website once or twice and could probably recognize you, push comes to shove, because you were in the paper the other day, or you're a member of the same business chamber. But they're not clients. They don't really know what it is that you do, right? They don't know that you've suddenly offered a new service in your business that really solves the problem that they've got. I'm sure many people listening to this podcast would go, oh, you know, I had a client the other day bought a thing from somebody else because they didn't know that I offered it.
Yeah.
Okay. All that is a lack of intimacy that you have with your people. Now, CRM is designed to be able to record that stuff, but not just on an individual basis, company-wide. So the conversation that your business partner has had with someone about the fact that they've just had a separation and the dog died and, you know, the horse died and, you know, we're going to the OK Corral and we're going to sing a country song, right? You know, that information we want to take from a business context, we want to take out of individuals, we want to put it into a location that everybody can access that so that we can have an intimate conversation with the connections that our business has. The automation side of that, on the flip side, now be very clear that not all CRMs and not all automation tools do both. Like, for example, MailChimp, awesome EDM system, but does not allow you to record intimate details about your prospects and connections, but it will create leverage. And so what we're looking for ideally to help us grow is a system that does both. Records information about our customers and contacts, whether we put it in or they put it in as a result of some action that they've taken, and an automation tool that allows us to create leverage, right, in communication and updates. Now, the cool thing about, I think, that when we go through this process with clients, is that, A, we don't want to build everything from the start because we don't know what it's going to look like for them. Things will change as you do it. It's not a tick this box and we're done forevermore kind of thing. In the same way that if we build a website, guess what? When you change your services, you need to change your website.
Yep.
If you change your pitch slightly, you need to change your website. If you change your staff team, you need to change your team page, and so on. Is that it allows us to kind of unpack what the process should be and almost engineer that predictability. So you've got a customer. What do you want to say to them at this point? right? You do this thing 10 times a day and it only takes you 5 minutes each time you do it, but you do it 10 times a day. That's an hour a day times 200 times a year. It's 200 hours times the five people on your team, right? You know, that's 1,000 hours. There's a pretty reasonable business case to automate or systemize that particular thing.
Mm.
But we don't know it until we drill into and now what, and now what, and now what. Okay. The same way that if you tell the kids to clean their bedroom, if they don't do it, well, and now what?
Mm.
If they do, and now what?
Mm. Yeah. It's a realization, I guess, too, isn't it? Like once I would imagine there's a certain part of people who haven't been involved or haven't had a CRM or haven't really sort of harnessed that real, power or opportunity. Let's say more than power opportunity that might bring, that once they get that it's an organic sort of process and that it's a changing process, because I feel like a lot of people are still, and sort of understandably so, they're still caught up in an idea about marketing that which is still around in some areas of you do it and it's fixed in place and then you don't interact with it. I mean, the world's very different. For the most part, it's more interactive and it changes and it works better because it's changing and because it's getting information to better understand. But people are still very caught up in in my day, it used to be you just put it out there and look at it and then you'd call and then you'd buy it and then that's it. And it's like, see you later. And that's very simple. And there's, yes, it's sort of a simplistic, and people almost have a memory of pride, but like that sort of frustration that, well, why does it have to be more complicated? Because I've had this, or at least had this implied part of conversations where people do, once again, I guess, understandably feel like perhaps it's more complicated because you're just trying to sell them more stuff, and that they're going, oh, you're only doing that because, you're just making it more complicated to sell more stuff to me. And I'm suspicious of that. And I mean, there's certainly parts of that where people do that, no doubt, but the core, once people do understand the core benefits of this process that can be organic and understand things, that's where like some elements of AI come in now too, right? Like into understanding information better and being able to disseminate it in the right way.
Yeah. Well, like AI, obviously AI over the last sort of year and a half has really entered into the conversation in marketing and business process quite significantly. It is creating massive leverage in what it is that we want, but what we can deliver. But it still comes back to the fact, if we don't know where we want someone to go and roughly what that looks like, AI won't help either. It's just a tool. In the same way that your CRM is just a tool and your marketing automation systems are just a tool and your website is just a tool. The challenge I think that we as business owners face, and marketers to an extent as well, is that as marketers who provide a point solution, so if I just did PPC for Google Ads, for example, right, I can absolutely, run an amazing PPC campaign that's going to drive a shit ton of traffic wherever you want it to go, right? And the question becomes, where do you want it to go, Saul? You're like, well, I don't know because I'm not a marketer here. I don't know what my customer journey is supposed to look like.
Mm.
Fine, send it to my website. And then it gets the website and the traffic goes, now what do I need to do? And the website's not set in a way that says, okay, well, we need to convert that into an email address or an e-commerce sale or an inquiry or something. And if that's not structured in the right way, fantastic. That means we've got a contact. Now what? Right? But Google Ads guy doesn't really give a shit what happens to the traffic after it's, hit the website.
No.
It's not what I'm paid for. But we as business owners, need to understand that. And unless we are educated to understand what that customer journey is looks like. We can't then advise our providers who are doing these little point solutions how the puzzle is supposed to fit together.
Mm.
It's like, you know, you've got 1,000 people all holding one puzzle piece. But unless there's somebody who says, this is how the puzzle is supposed to go together, guys.
Yeah, but people aren't.
We're in real trouble because everyone's just going to stand around with holding the one puzzle piece and go, I don't know what happened next.
Yeah, they're just doing
I've done my bit. I've got my puzzle piece.
Yeah, no, that's right. Or the thing that I've heard, I mean, it's especially common with trades because people are busy and they're like actually on the job, and especially if they're like a sole trader, is that you could do all those other things right. You could have great leads. You could have like all the inquiries coming through the website. And then especially if a lot of them are urgent, but if people can't actually answer the phone or have somebody at least to answer the phone or to respond in a timely way, then that piece of the puzzle, you know, so then that's I guess where, you know, the strategy encompassing at least advisory things around other things, because you can't always just set, you know, certain parts of that puzzle up for people in business. Like people have to do some things themselves, but at least making them aware of that, because that's like something that I've seen a lot. And, you know, it's sort of hard because it's like, well, then it comes back to the question of, okay, if you're only person X, and you're getting all these leads, even if you've got the leads, can you even handle them? So therefore, you know, should you be doing that much? Mm-hmm. Like, there's all these like really simple, which are often only don't realize after the fact, where you go, oh, that's actually way too much, or I mean, or whatever, like any configuration of that. So what you do like these days for clients, Tim, what's the thing that you see in your experience with clients that brings you the most joy and happiness about you know, either results or through the whole process? What's the thing that really makes you the most happy?
I love people seeing succeed.
Mm.
You know, This business thing that we decided to get into is not the easiest rodeo. I know I joke and say, look, you know, when you quit your day job because you're sort of working for an idiot, you've just replaced them from another one that rather than seeing them in the office, you see them looking back at you in the mirror every morning. But I've seen people succeed, right? You know, the ability to then, you know, through that sort of enterprise, allows people to provide for their loved ones, for their family, for their community, to create a point of difference yeah. in their world, however big that world happens to be, mm. and leave a legacy on other people is really sort of heartwarming for me. I love being able to do that.
Mm.
You know, there's always, I guess there's this sort of flip side is like, oh my God, all marketers are charlatans and crooks and, you know, but look, generally speaking, when we work with someone, we want the best for them. We want to be recognized for that value we provide, but we want the best for your business. We don't go in to deliberately try to rip people off. No marketer does. I think it's a bit of a, you know, frustration of mine. We actually generally want people to see people succeed through the thing that we do. Often it's bits that are outside of our control that it doesn't.
Mm.
Right. Marketing is a great experiment in many ways. You know, we try stuff and see if it works. So, right. So, you know, a question I get asked is, you know, if I'm doing an email follow-up sequence or cadence, you know, well, how long should I wait between email one and email two and email three? You know, well, guess what? There's no hard and fast rule. It depends. What we're going to do is we're going to try for your audience different things, and we're going to split test and say, well, what gets better results for you and what gets better results for your client.
Hmm.
But we can only know that by putting a volume of traffic through it over time to understand that. And again, that's constantly changing.
That's understanding. And I guess in a funny, more scientific sort of way, that's unrelated to curiosity. too, because like if you're not curious, it's obviously for your business, like to get good data, you know, out. But if you don't have that initial impetus, maybe to even think that's important, it's like, well, you know, can't it just be like the old days when you put the billboard up and someone just called, or you got the newspaper? And I mean, that's still in the mix. That's obviously still there. And
but even then, you know, that whatever mechanism you had for getting people aware of you, and whatever call to action was off the back of that billboard, maybe it was a phone number, maybe it was an address. If you go back far enough, you know, someone says, "Here's my thing, be aware of it." You know, that's just the start of a customer journey. Someone then does a thing off the back of that.
Yep.
Right. And then you want them to do the next thing. Maybe they want them to book an appointment with you. Okay. So how do we assure that most people who book appointments actually show up for their appointments? And when they're there, how do we ensure that they are interested in what our product is?
Hmm.
What do we do after that? We have a system we call our sales recovery framework, right, that actually converts about 50% of people who don't buy from you straight away over time, because the people you speak to who want a new website, who want a renovation, who want some insulation, want some da-da-da, whatever it is that they're talking to you about, are not always ready to buy today. They're going to buy from someone in the next 180 days to solve that problem. It's just not necessarily today's problem. And the bigger price you have on your thing, the more likely it is that they won't go ahead straight away. Because I don't know. Look, let's be real. If I come and talk to you, Saul, I don't know what it costs me to build a website. I have an idea because I'm in the space, but some people have no idea what it costs to build that site that you've got. They go, "I like what you've done with yours. Can I have that?" And you go, "Fine, it's 50K. I'm just picking a number out of the air. Right? Or I want to pop up, I want to convert a shipping container into a cafe, right? And in my mind, I'm like, surely that's not going to be more than $25,000. I've got $25,000. I can do that. And when you turn around to me and say, "Oh, absolutely, Tim, we can do that. It's $250,000. You're like, it hasn't necessarily changed my desire to get the outcome and do it. It just means, oh, shit, I now need to go and sort of take some money out of my mortgage.
Yeah.
And I've got to go through a refinance process, which is going to take me four, 5, 6 months to be able to do it, and then come back to the original conversation and go, "Well, I've got the money now."
Yeah.
Or hit up friends and family to sort of come in as a partnership with me.
Yeah. Or then just leave your day job and become a builder.
And that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Some people do. So, you know, that doesn't happen straight away. That takes some things, take time. And if we don't, you know, if we've done all the work to get someone in and only care about the people who are ready to sort of go ahead today, we're going to leave a lot of opportunity on the table. So what do we do to following up? So I see the same thing on social media at the time. I don't know how many people you're connected to. I'm going to look it up right now while we chat on LinkedIn, right?
I think it's over 9K.
How many reckon?
I think it's about, I think last look at, actually I haven't looked for a while. I think it's over 9K.
There we go, 9,000, more than 9,000 people that you've started relationships with, 9,149 that you've started relationships with and not progressed them. You've left it in their court to progress.
Yeah, well, many, like, I don't want to.
Like, it could be like going on lots of first dates and never having a second one because you didn't actually ask if someone wanted a second date.
Yeah, but then it's a numbers game too, isn't it? It's like, well, you don't want to go forward with all those people because you haven't, you know, there's obviously there's
yeah, but this becomes a numbers game because we're not deepening the relationship, because we haven't designed a system that allows us as a business to deepen the relationship with people over long enough that they go, "You're a genius. I love what you do. I am going to need that at some point, and I like you enough to wait to come to you when I need it." So what do we do? We just connect with more people. We connect with more people and we connect with more people. And we spend more ad dollars in the hope that we connect with more people again. Right? In the vague hope that somewhere we're going to find that person who wants to have 10 kids with us the first time we meet them.
It's a lot of kids. That's a lot of bedroom cleaning up, Tim.
Yeah, mine, it absolutely is.
That's a lot of bedroom. You'll need a good sales and automation system to keep that under wraps.
That's right, to deepen the relationship.
To keep it, perhaps.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, that's my T-shirt. I'm wearing my keep T-shirt. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
but these guys, like this, you know, for if I, you know, if you're watching the video here on YouTube or wherever we are sort of watching this, you know, Keep as an automation company, they've been around since 2002, which is about the time that I guess marketing automation became a thing, right? My kiddo Salesforce, they were sort of, you know, early noughties, late 90s, as companies, that's when they were sort of getting together. You know, what have they done? They've given me quite a good quality T-shirt, right, as part of their branding kit. And I've got half a dozen of them. So every time I pull one out, I've gone, I'm constantly now top of mind with this particular brand.
Yeah. It's good to have
and pretty a pretty sensible marketing strategy.
And you can't understand the importance of a good T-shirt. And I'm not actually joking there either. Like it's like a funny thing because I'm not a reseller of Dulux or anything like that. I'm not a painter, but I had a commercial painter a few years ago at BNI who was worked with Dulux very closely, and he had a whole heap. He brought one day to the meeting a whole heap of these T-shirts that had Dulux plastered all over them, but the T-shirts were really good T-shirts, like great, like really like top notch T-shirts, and it's actually one of my favorite ones to wear. And I actually had somebody the other day, I could see them looking at me like, oh, he's obviously like a painter or something. It's like I got no relationship with Dulux at all, but I'm very happy to wear the T-shirt. But it's an interesting example because sometimes those little things become sort of quite important and they lead to other stuff. But just like as we're getting on sort of the tail end of what we're what we're talking about, and I asked you before about what was important, you know, when you're working with clients and things like that, and we've been talking also about that these things are ultimately, you know, for people's business, and then what's important to them, why they even run their business. What's important on a personal level? Like, what's important to you, Tim, like outside of, you know, the businessy sort of things, but, you know, it's often linked as a business owner, but what's most important to you in life at the moment? Outside of the T-shirt.
Outside of the T-shirt, I think the thing that I love about my business, and I've worked from home now for 13 years, and my team is scattered all over the world, so it actually kind of works quite well for us. You know, Zoom has been great because we've basically got this virtual office we open all day long to connect with people. So I love the flexibility of it. I can kind of work from anywhere. My business coach mentioned this the other day. He says, you know, we've got a coconut business. And I've literally got the laptop under the screen right now that I can pick up and work from anywhere.
Yeah.
I can actually go to a beach and, you know, drink cocktails from a coconut and work from the beach as long as there's an internet connection. So I love the flexibility that my business allows me to have. And I think also sort of being able to connect with people all over the world who are going through very, very similar challenges as well. Mm. In fact, just before this call, I was on a call with a guy in the US who's, you know, has been in the game that I'm in about the same period of time. Mm. You know, our businesses are in very different, similar stages about where we're at. We're facing very similar challenges. Mm. And I think without things like Zoom and whatnot, to be able to connect with someone on the other side of the world, wouldn't be able to have that shared experience.
Mm.
Which is really, really cool. And I think for me personally, a lot of what drives me is around creating those shared experiences. So whether I have a sort of a very keen passion to, you know, to cook, you know, with people. So I love cooking and entertaining, and that's part of that. I think that shared experience, which I love, and those things are super important to me. I've just invested far too much money in a kitchen renovation just for that very reason.
It's important to you. So, I mean, that's, yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I'm a little bit the same. I like the flexibility that has probably been like this for a long time, but I've been more, well, maybe not because of COVID, but since COVID, like that certainly accelerated activity online for a lot of people too, and made them, you know, probably think about things differently because they were sort of forced it into the situation. They're like, oh, it's actually pretty good. But I'm a bit the same. I like the flexibility, you know, us being in a generally digital space, but it's still like the ability, it still kind of blows my mind that, although it probably shouldn't, if people are saying, what are you talking about? But like that I can, you know, talk to people across the other side of the world, talk to you, you know, and have these types of conversations, and it'd be very personable, and you can do things that you would otherwise not be able to do. I think it's amazing. And I mean, on that, I guess on that, you know, sort of personal note, I said at the start, I'd ask you about a quote, and you said you already had one. So what is it, Tim? What's your quote that you'd like to share?
I mean, there's so many good quotes, Ryan. This is really weird because I failed my poetry unit at high school. High school English. Wasn't very good at English in high school. Maybe because I didn't try. Very good at business and economics. Those were my subjects. But this one is my favorite, sort of as a part of a passage out of my favorite poem. Right. And it's from Robert Frost. You know, two roads converged in a yellow wood. And I took the road less traveled by, and that's made all the difference.
Nice. That's the art, and that's the, you said you weren't very good at English, but yeah, I've been talking about art and science a fair bit, and I do relate to that very strongly. I like that, where those two worlds meet. I think it's really fascinating. You struck me as a bit of a Renaissance man, Tim.
A Renaissance man. I'm going to take that.
No. I'm sort of, no, this sounds like a joke, but like that for me, that means, it doesn't literally mean, you know, someone who loves art and science, because that's
obviously. I get my puffy sleeves out with the ruffles.
please, Tim. Yeah, next time I see you online, I'll be expecting that. The puffy sleeves, a nice big foppish hat with a big feather in it. No, Renaissance meaning, you know, the sort of thinking about an interest in multiple things and like striving to excel in a bunch of them and finding sort of meaning and cross meanings in things in art and science and other stuff. Like I always love that stuff. I find it absolutely fascinating. So I'll call you a Renaissance man, and you can hang your hat on that one.
I suspect we have some long conversations ahead of us over a bottle of red wine or two.
Yeah, I think so.
Philosophy of life, the meaning of everything.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah, and so, and on a practical note, for people listening too, where's the best place online or places where people can go and learn more about you and win more clients?
Look, definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm really active on LinkedIn. I should say my team is really active on my behalf on LinkedIn. You can always hit us up on our website at winmoreclients.com.au. I'm sure you'll put that link in the show notes as well.
So
that's probably the best two places. You can follow me as well on my podcast at More Clients, Less Effort, which you'll find on all the good podcasting channels as well.
Thank you, Tim. Great chat. Fantastic to, and thanks for sharing like everything the way that you actually shared. It was very interesting, and hope that everyone, I mean, listening gets some really great things out of it. And thanks again for being on, and say goodbye to everybody, Tim.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone. See you soon. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.